This is where Texas politics gets interesting. Here again are two guys named Jason, some great guests, and cold Texas beer for another smart conversation on Y'allitics, the unofficial political podcast of Texas.
Once again, guys, we're waiting on Wheeler to get ready here. He says, what are you looking up?
You know, the funny thing with me is that, and my wife complains about this too, you can ask me 20 times if I'm ready, and I will say yes every time, as I'm clearly not ready and doing other things.
And you look away and you're finishing another task.
The funny thing with that is that I'm always the one who's waiting for everybody at the end to get going. So I'm always really ready, I just don't look it.
Well, we are going now. New episode of Y'allitics out now, so thanks so much for joining us on YouTube. If you're watching it on YouTube, we always appreciate you downloading each episode. Jason Whiteley here with Jason Wheeler.
Right, and we're at the Manhattan Project in Dallas, which is a really cool place. And if you, I was looking up the address. That's what you caught me doing there at the end. 2215 Sulphur Street in Dallas. It's not far from downtown Dallas. And I love the theme here, because if you are familiar with Manhattan Project, obviously the movie now, Oppenheimer, made a lot of people re-familiar with that.
There's an Oppenheimer beer here too, by the way.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay, yeah. I didn't choose that one.
The last one.
So they all have sort of this atomic theme. I'm having the, hand me that menu again for the description. I'm having the Plutonium 239, which is a coconut porter.
Sounds about right. Fruit.
There's a little fruit in there.
Yeah, this place is one of my favorite places anywhere, Manhattan Project, just on the west side of the skyline. I don't know why I'm looking at the menu here. I was trying to find the Oppenheimer. I thought they had an Oppenheimer beer. But I'm having the Necessary Evil. It's a Pilsner. It's fantastic. And we've already started eating, so the beer doesn't...
We're soaking it up as we go.
Exactly. We have an interesting episode, one we've tried to, try to put together for 3 years now. Mm-hmm. Since the whole Ken Paxton saga really got going. We have with us one of the Paxton whistleblowers today. Mm-hmm. It's Mark Penley. You may have seen him or may have heard him or may have read about him during the Paxton trial, the impeachment trial in the state Senate earlier this month. When was it? Earlier this month.
It's hard to keep it all straight, but yes, it was earlier this month.
He is... long-time attorney. You've known Ken Paxton for since you guys became attorneys, I believe, is what?
Well, 30 years.
30
more,
years.
More, yes. A little more.
And you are the former Texas Deputy Attorney General.
For criminal justice.
Yep. And on the side of you here, we have Don Tittle, defense attorney here in Dallas. And Don, you're having one with us. What are you having?
That's an Oktoberfest.
Okay, perfect.
Apropos here, Don also represents Mark in the... And the lawsuit, the whistleblower, the whistleblower lawsuit, and the one that may go back before Travis County court here soon. But before we get too far into this, let's just lay out what happened here, because a lot of stuff has been happening over the last month here. Ken Paxton was acquitted by the state Senate, but you pointed out, Mark, you pointed out the other day in a press conference that you guys aren't going away at all, because for people who may not realize, there's still a completely separate lawsuit that you guys filed that accuses Ken Paxton of wrongfully firing you and the other three whistleblowers, and for retaliation as well. For people who need to catch up onto this, why aren't you going away? Why wasn't the acquittal enough to say that Ken Paxton didn't do anything wrong?
Well, the Senate proceeding was not a legal court trial. We have rights under the Texas Whistleblower Act. That's a statute. That's a law passed by the Texas legislature. And it protects state employees who go to law enforcement and make a good faith report of illegal conduct that's going on in a state agency and then notify the agency that they've done so. We did all that. We went to the FBI on September 30th, and the next morning on October 1st, 2020, we sent a notice to the HR department at the Office of the Attorney General that we had made that report in good faith about illegal conduct by Attorney General Paxton. And then Jeff Mateer, our boss, the first assistant at the time, sent a text to General Paxton advising him that we had made the report to the FBI and that we had also notified the agency. So we did everything that the statute requires us to do. We took subsequent steps under state administrative proceedings to appeal, and the agency, did not restore our jobs.
And Mark, that was 3 years ago
yes.
to the week, to this podcast here. Right. I know, I'm sure at the time, everyone was waiting to find out what General Paxton's reaction was going to be when Jeff Mateer sent that text message. What was the reaction?
Well, we asked him to come meet with us that afternoon, and that would have been the morning of October 1st. We asked him to come meet with us. He was supposed to be in the office that day. He had flown back from Cleveland the night before. There had been a presidential debate that week, and he'd gone up for that, and I believe a Republican Attorney General's meeting. And we understood he flew back on the night of the 30th or the late in the evening, and we expected him at work the next day, and we wanted to talk to him and tell him he had to stop doing all these things for Nate Paul. He had to stop the subpoenas being served.
This was his friend and donor, Nate Paul, who all of the impeachment articles are centered around. Basically, you know, the allegation is that Attorney General Kim Paxton just went out of his way in multiple unusual and as you all reported to the FBI, you thought unlawful ways to help this friend and donor.
Right, and it's illogical that he was doing all these things. That it, and as time passed and we'd all tried to talk to him and tell him what he was doing for Nate Paul or what he was trying to do for Nate Paul was unethical, illegal, against office policy and established procedure, he wouldn't listen. He kept pushing, he kept going, he kept pressuring us. And then finally, he went behind our backs and hired this five-year lawyer who had no experience as a prosecutor, no experience in federal law enforcement, and hires him and turns him, basically what we found out in the Senate proceeding was he turned him over to Nate Paul and his attorney to direct him. So the Attorney General of Texas hires a five-year lawyer, no prosecutorial experience, turns him over to the target of an FBI investigation. And from the very beginning, David Maxwell and I saw that Nate Paul has every reason in the world to want to get the Attorney General of Texas to mount a counterattack on the FBI and on the U.S. Attorney's Office in Austin because he's the target of a federal investigation.
But you laid all of this out there in the Senate chambers, and you know, the trial proceeded. It was, you know, less than 2 weeks, and then the senators, the senator jurors, we'll call them here, came back with their decision, and it wasn't even close on any of these articles of impeachment. The vote wasn't even close. It was almost down party lines with Democrats voting to convict. A couple of Republicans crossed lines there. What were you thinking when you're watching these vote totals come in after this trial?
Well, that's a very good question, Jason. First of all, I was shocked. I was extremely disappointed because it basically wound up being a party line vote except for two brave senators who crossed party lines. And I want to salute Senators Hancock and Nichols. They voted on the evidence. They went against extraordinary political pressure. But I want to make another point. And I also want to thank some of the Democrats. I mean, they all faced up to the evidence and saw corruption there and saw that the Attorney General we have is unfit to serve in that office. And they voted against him. So there were 14 votes at least on almost all the articles to convict him and remove him from office. I want to thank the 60 Republicans in the House who crossed, who went against their own party to vote for the impeachment. That was a very brave thing as well. But here's what I want to say about the Senate proceeding. And we call it a trial, but it wasn't a trial in a state district court. The Senate adopted their rules. They adopted the rules of evidence and tried to follow those rules. But the bottom line is we got a political result. As I said, only two senators voted against the wishes of powerful influences within the Republican Party. And here's another point, and Don and I have talked about this. In a normal trial, number one, you don't know who the jury is till the first day of trial, and then you can't talk to the jurors, and you can't try to influence or threaten the jurors. These Republican senators, I do want to say this on their behalf, they should never have been threatened the way they were threatened. They were put under extraordinary political pressure. And we've heard rumors, I don't know if they're true or not, that they came very close to having 21 votes to convict, but then when they couldn't get the 21st vote, people started to back off voting to convict.
Right.
And you know, some of these senators had billboards put up in their districts that were pro-Paxton billboards. They were threatened with well-funded primary opponents. You could never do that in a real trial.
Right.
You could get prosecuted for
yeah,
that.
Yeah, a juror wouldn't be threatened with possibly losing their job depending on how they vote.
Exactly.
Yeah, they wouldn't have the political you know, weight behind that as well, too.
Right.
So the Senate does the acquittal. This lawsuit is still pending, but you guys had reached a $3.3 million settlement, a preliminary agreement to reach this settlement. And Don, I want to bring you in on this. My understanding is now, since the acquittal happened, there seems to still be no appetite at all in the House of Representatives, by Republicans who lead that chamber, to approve the $3.3 million settlement. So Mark Penley and the other three whistleblowers are still out in the cold on that. So you guys are now asking to the state Supreme Court to put this back in play in Travis County. Let's go to trial on this if the House isn't going to pay up. Is that right?
Yeah, right. So the settlement was contingent on funding. Right? That was absolutely, I mean, any settlement is, right?
Sure.
If there's agreement that one side will pay and the other will release their claims. But in this case, when there was a decision not to fund it, of course, Ken Paxton at that point, they see this opportunity, they want to put it on a never-ending loop. Oh, come back in 2 years, come back in 4 years, just go forever.
And that's, of course, not unusual, lawmakers tell me. Some settlements can sit in the legislature for years.
I think on this one it's unusual because we built it into the settlement that if it wasn't funded, it was off. And so that's where we're at. Look, if it could theoretically still get funded in the special session or another method. But if that doesn't happen, it's our position that, look, there's no settlement. So Supreme Court, make your ruling on the issue of whether he's a public employee. He's making what I think is a ridiculous argument that he's not a public employee. But
so because he's not a public employee, he argues that he's not subject to have to.
If you're not a public employee, then you wouldn't be subject to the Whistleblower Act, right? But he's a state employee for purposes of getting his back pay, as we know.
Well, and his
yesterday.
Pension and right, yeah. All that.
As he says.
Let me ask you more about the Travis County Court here. If this were to end up back in Travis County Court,
yeah.
This could lead to discovery. This could lead to a lot more information coming out about the Attorney General, right?
You have a right to discovery in a civil trial, right? We never have done that in this case. Now, what's unique about it is we could just skip discovery and say we want to go to trial. That's what I think we ought to do, right? One thing Ken Paxton doesn't want to do is go to trial. If he's in discovery, he can potentially stall. He can say, hey, I'm not subject to a deposition, and if the judge says, yes, you are, then he appeals. I mean, that's his game, right? Delay, delay, delay. If we said, hey, we don't need discovery, we just got 2 weeks of discovery, you know, we're ready for trial, judge, when can you get a jury down here? That would call his bluff, and I think that's where we're headed.
How likely do you think it is that will happen, number one? And number two, how likely do you think it is that we will see this settlement go through as a $3.3 million yeah. settlement, or possibly even more once it yeah. gets in the hands of a Travis County jury?
You know, the question of whether it goes through now is up to the legislature. And if one thinks about it, there are logical reasons why it's good for both sides, right? Our side says, hey, we're good with that amount, and they want to move on with their lives. It's good for Paxton. He doesn't want to go under oath, clearly. I can see.
But is it good for those House Republicans who balked at this? Because
yep.
a lot of Republicans, we've spoken to a Republican on this podcast who is up in Collin County. He's a precinct chair. And that was the thing. He was all for Paxton. He said he would support him again. But it was that $3.3 million yep. settlement. He didn't feel good about that being paid. And he wanted Paxton removed for that reason alone. So now, if you know Paxton is free and clear, he's back in his office again.
Right.
Now it's almost like, is there a liability on these Republican senators if they decide to go ahead and pay that money? You know, it looks like they've decided to pay it.
Here's what I'd say on that. First of all, the House put their arms around these guys, as they should have.
Yeah.
And I think it's a very tough position for them to take now that they've just told everyone that these guys are heroes, which they are, and that they were wronged, which they were, and they lost significantly, which they did. So how do you turn around and say, oh, but now that the trial's over, we're not going to back them? That's a tough position politically or just morally to take. But if they choose to go forward, I mean, look, this thing, that one thing about a whistleblower statute is you, if the prevailing party gets attorney's fees, there's four whistleblowers, four different lawyers. We've probably got 100 years of experience between us. I mean, 3.3 can turn into 9.3, in my opinion.
You think if it goes to a Travis County jury, it could become that?
I think that we've got a fantastic chance of winning in front of any jury. I don't care. It could be a Collin County jury. I think we'd win. But ultimately, a judge is going to rule that that he's entitled to his entire retirement that Ken Paxton basically cheated him out of, which was a couple $1 million. I mean, so you start adding all this stuff up. Look, we settled the case. We thought it was a great settlement for us, but it was not 100 cents on the dollar. There was some compromise. If we go to trial, I don't think there won't be any compromise. The jury's going to rule on it, and then they're going to add attorney's fees. So I think the number would easily double, if not more.
Mark, in addition to the $3.3 million, you and the other whistleblowers also want a public apology from the Attorney General for calling you all rogue employees.
Right.
Why is that so important?
Well, he accused us of wrongdoing. He accused us of lying. He accused us of committing crimes. We didn't. We told the truth. That's all we did. We did the right thing. We tried to stop him and Nate Paul and his attorney from doing the wrong thing. Brandon Kamik went and got grand jury subpoenas when he was being directed and supervised by Nate Paul and Michael Wynn.
Brandon Kamik was a special prosecutor alleged special prosecutor.
He was an outside counsel by the terms of the contract that Ken Paxton unilaterally signed. He was not allowed to be a prosecutor, and that's stated in the contract.
Gotcha.
But which is one of the reasons we moved to quash those grand jury subpoenas. He held himself out as a special prosecutor. He was not.
A lot of characters here. I didn't mean to interrupt you, though. You were talking about why it's important for the public apology for being called a rogue employee.
Well, he smeared us, and we did the right thing. He was the one doing the wrong thing, and we want him to apologize for it. We want him to admit it. Ken Paxton is still telling false narratives to the public. I heard Louis Gohmert say something the other day that I thought was really profound. In the trial, Paxton's defense team tried to create this narrative that, gee, we shouldn't overturn the results of an election. The voters knew all about this when they elected him in 2022, or reelected him. Well, they didn't know that. You know why they didn't know that? Because Ken Paxton denied it. He denied our allegations. We filed our whistleblower case in November of 2020. And so those allegations were out there, but Ken Paxton was denying them. He issued a press release. In fact, he issued two press releases the week after we went to the FBI, the first week of October of 2020. So he's consistently denied everything and said that we were out there telling the false narrative when, in fact, it's him that's telling the false narrative. You know, if the voters knew everything he was doing wrong with Nate Paul and still wanted to put him back in office, then he could make the claim, well, the voters knew this, but they didn't know this.
Let's go back to the trial and this settlement. There was some conjecture there that, you know, you all were just out for a payday. We listened to your attorney here tell us that this would not make you whole, even if you all got the $3.3 million and just split it evenly between the four of you and didn't pay any attorneys. From the sound of it, this wouldn't even come close to making you whole. What do you say to this notion that, you know, you did all of this looking for a payday?
Yeah, I wouldn't wish this on anybody. That was a great job that we all had. We were well paid as state employees at that level, at the executive level. And it was a great job. It was a great group of people to work with. All of that was destroyed. I couldn't replace that income. I was unemployed for 4.5 months after I got fired. Ryan Vassar was unemployed for 6 months after he got fired, and he had four very young children at home, including a newborn baby who had been in the NICU in July or August, and then he gets fired in September. So imagine the stress on him, and they mocked him in closing argument, which was shameful. I mean, these guys are good people. They are public-minded. They are honest. They were doing their jobs. That's what we all tried to do. We didn't want to have to go to the FBI. Ken Paxton left us no choice. We either sat there and watched him break the law and became complicit in it And he pressured me to sign off on the approval memo to hire Kamek, and I told him, you're about to interfere in a federal investigation. That's criminal conduct. You could be charged with obstruction of justice. I told him that in McKinney on September 26. Plus, I told him he was setting himself up to be charged for bribery because of all the things he was doing for Nate Paul, given their relationship. And I didn't even know their entire relationship at that time. I know much more now. No. And so one of the things, one point I want to make, and then I know you're trying to ask a follow-up,
is... we have a million questions,
Even though we got a political result in the Senate proceeding, I am grateful to the House, and I'm glad that proceeding occurred, even though he wasn't removed from office, because evidence was developed and made public. Almost 4,000 documents were filed on the Senate website by the House managers and their attorneys. Rusty Hardin, Dick DeGaren, their entire team, all those House managers deserve thanks from the public. This is about the truth coming out. As Don said, Ken Paxton is an expert at delay in the courts. His securities fraud case has been pending for almost 8 years. That's justice delayed is justice denied. He's delayed us for 3 years now, coming up in November. And we have a court system so we can bring 12 people in, put them in a jury box, and present evidence to them and let them make a decision. But Ken Paxton doesn't want that. He doesn't want accountability. He doesn't want the public to know the truth. He sure doesn't want judges and juries to know the truth. So he uses all the power he has as Attorney General to tie things up in legal knots to keep that day of accountability from coming.
You're a skilled attorney, because that last statement that you just made was like reading my mind. That was the follow-up I was going to ask you. You put it all out there in this trial. You talk about all that you lost in losing this job. And I was going to ask you, did you feel at the end when you get this result that it was for nothing?
No.
But you really feel like you all have furthered this. Ken
right.
Paxton still has criminal exposure out there. You really feel like you have furthered this cause.
Yeah, we do. And as Blake Brickman said Monday in our press conference, this
another
is about
one of the whistleblowers.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. This is about truth and justice. Yes, it's about money, because we got hurt. As I said in my testimony at trial, I filed suit because I sustained damages under the law. The Whistleblower Act is a state law. It applies to all state agencies. And as we pointed out in the press conference on Monday, the Office of the Attorney General has a Whistleblower Act notice on its own website. So for the agency to now claim that somehow Ken Paxton and the OAG are not subject to it is ludicrous. And I do want to point something out. We sued the Office of the Attorney General. That's the state agency. The state agency fired us. I got a letter from the first assistant who fired me on OAG letterhead. An OAG HR representative came in and, you know, told me, here's what's going to happen with your termination. The same thing happened for all of us. So the public needs to understand we're just following the law. And the law was passed in the Texas legislature. And the law entitles us to damages. We sustain damages. I couldn't replace my income. As I said at trial, I'm 69 years old. I was almost 67 when I got fired. It's hard to replace that kind of salary at that age. That's just the facts of life. So I've got a lost wages claim. We've all suffered emotional anguish. I wake up at 2 or 3 a.m. many a night thinking about this case. It's hard to turn that switch off because this is an intense thing to go through.
Mark, considering all that, do you ever have regrets? I should have just shut up and let somebody dig their own hole and should have been quiet on everything?
Well, you know, we have a legal right, and we have a right to a public forum, that being a courtroom. And that's how we settle disputes in our society. So would it be easier to go away? I don't know. I know this. We all want to pursue our rights.
But I'm sorry to interrupt you, Mark. But why not? Do you ever think that maybe if I would have been quiet, just kept my well-paying job, gotten my pension, walked away, and let someone else dig their own hole, and just stayed in my position? You ever think about that and not have to wake up in the middle of the night?
You know what? Then I got to look at myself in the mirror every day and know I did the wrong thing, and it's too late to go back and change it. And I don't want to live that way. And the other seven didn't either. And we all took our public duty seriously. We all took an oath to uphold the Constitution and the law when we took those jobs. I've taken that oath in the federal government many times. at the Air Force Academy as an Air Force officer, as an assistant United States attorney, and then I took a very similar oath when I went to work as a deputy attorney general for the state of Texas. We all took that oath seriously. And when you've been in law enforcement, you know there are lines. You don't cross those lines. You don't misuse criminal investigative powers to go help your campaign donor and your buddy because he's in trouble with the federal authorities and take state powers that are delegated by the people of Texas through the legislature to the office of the attorney general and use it to mount a counterattack and run interference for your friend. And we saw that's what Ken Paxton was doing. And we warned him and we told him and he wouldn't listen. And here's the thing about him. He acts like he's listening to you, and then when he can't get you to do what he wants you to do, he goes behind your back. And that's what he did with me. He went behind my back, hired this 5-year lawyer when he had a former United States attorney that he also interviewed, Joe Brown, who understood the federal criminal justice system.
I want to ask both of you this, because you've both practiced law for a long time, and I know that sometimes it goes your way, sometimes it doesn't. But you know, after going through this impeachment trial, which, as you rightly point out, is not a criminal trial, but after going through this, Don, has it altered what you think of when you think of justice? Has it shaken this belief that justice can be had?
Well, that was shaken a long time ago, but on other cases.
Wow. this wasn't the one.
This didn't really do anything different. I mean, it's like Mark says, it was an impeachment proceeding. You know, the lieutenant governor said at the beginning, it's not a civil trial, it's not a criminal trial, it's a political trial. That's what he said. And so I've not been as shocked at the outcome that politicians as jurors with a politician as the judge in a political trial reached a political result.
And the judge's decisions in this case drove you crazy.
They did, but it doesn't surprise me that much. I mean, it was every time I would watch it, I was reminded of the old Holiday Inn Express commercial. You know, the guy sitting up there, and he's like he's not a real judge, but I did sleep at a Holiday Inn Express. That's what I kept thinking about. So this guy was acting like a real judge, and that's fine. But his rulings had a tremendous impact on the evidence that the jury and the people of the state got to hear. Significant evidence. I mean, the kind of evidence that really, I think, would turn the table.
Like we never heard from the alleged mistress.
I got the feeling midway through that I thought this is not going our direction, because I thought, there's an awareness that Ken Paxton's going to survive this, and he doesn't want Paxton to be shamed, right? And that's just the feeling I got. I'm not saying that it wasn't done. I mean, it was what it was, right? But anyway, yeah. I mean, it didn't really shake my sense of justice, but in another setting, I think it's going to be a different. Well, I'm confident it's going to be a different outcome.
How about you? Did it shake your sense of justice, Mark?
No, but it disappointed me. It disappointed me that all we could do as whistleblowers is go tell law enforcement what we had observed, what we knew, what we'd seen, what Ken Paxton had done and said. We did that. That was what happened when we went to the FBI, and David Maxwell also reported to DPS. So that's all the power we had, and then to be available to testify, which we were glad to do. The power to deal with Ken Paxton's illegal conduct lies elsewhere. We don't have that power. The legislature has power, and the House stepped up and did its duty. They conducted an investigation. They took it very seriously. They voted right before the end of May, and they impeached him. And under the Constitution, it went to the Senate for a trial. Unfortunately, we got a very disappointing result. I know some of the senators are saying they don't believe the case was proved beyond a reasonable doubt. I respectfully disagree. I think the evidence was very, very clear. I thought the testimony was clear. I haven't watched the entire trial. I've watched some of the witnesses now. I've been able to go back because we were all under the rule and we couldn't watch during the trial until it was over.
Let me ask one more real quick here.
Go ahead, Wheeler. This is your podcast.
Well, you just took a big bite, didn't you? Are you still chewing that?
Maybe we should get in all your stories that you did down there.
Yeah.
I've seen those, but go ahead.
Let's just roll them right now. No, I was just going to ask you a follow-up to that. Did this change how you think about your party? You are, you know, you were described as, you know, a rock-ribbed Republican. You know, certainly not someone who's ever voted for a Democrat, et cetera. And these were Republicans, by and large, who kept this from becoming a conviction. Does it shake your beliefs there?
Well, it disappoints me that people would put party over principle. And I want to say this. I think honesty and integrity in government should be a bipartisan ideal. And I want to salute Senator Hancock again. I listened to an interview he did on another station a week or so ago, and he said, this is a false choice that you can have public policy you like or integrity. We should have both. And we should insist on that. And the voters have the power to do that. So, but part of that is that the spotlight has to shine on wrongdoing so the voters know, hey, this guy's not telling the truth, this guy's not staying within the law, he's not acting ethically. And of all public offices, an attorney general ought to be above reproach, ethically and with his respect for the law. And I think the evidence at the Senate trial showed that he's not. He doesn't respect the law, and he's not being truthful about that. So a lot of the evidence came out. There's more evidence, as Don referred to. There was evidence that the House attorneys wanted introduced that was not accepted. So they offered evidence that was not allowed into evidence, and the senators didn't get to hear that. And that's too bad. But hopefully, over time, all of that will be made available to the public, and the public can see. So, you know, by the next election or the next court case, whatever happens, the public will know more and more about what went on.
Let me ask it more pointed. Are you still a Republican?
I'm a constitutional conservative who has a home in the Republican Party because that's where my values and my political philosophy fits. You asked me if I'm disappointed in the Republican Party. I'm disappointed with people in the party who put a person above the law. And why do some people, is Ken Paxton the indispensable man? I personally believe there's 500 conservative Republican attorneys in Texas who could do that job and be just as conservative with their public policy, run the office better, and would have integrity and respect the law. So Ken Paxton is not indispensable to Texas being a rock-ribbed conservative state.
Let me ask you, Don, we're all considering scenarios all the time. If the House of Representatives does not approve the $3.3 million settlement, and this does go back to a Travis County court, what are the chances Ken Paxton might pay that himself just to be rid of another legal issue?
Yeah.
Is that allowable, first of all? And second, what are the chances of it?
I don't know any reason it's not allowable, right? I mean, if the money is paid to satisfy the a settlement, then I think it could be done. I tend to think something like that might happen. I can say one thing that I think is almost certain. Ken Paxton's never going to take a witness stand, ever, ever, ever.
You think that he might pay it out of his own funds?
Well, either his funds or a donor. Who knows how that works? But I cannot imagine he would take the stand. And if he does, he's going to have to plead the Fifth, which is going to be a horrible look. You can't get a worse look than that. And he would have to.
Because he has the other cases pending.
Well, that and other reasons. I mean,
right.
He can still get prosecuted in Travis County. I mean, he committed crime, so it's a good idea to plead the Fifth when that's the situation you're in.
If that were to go.
Are you torn on that? I mean, obviously you want the settlement. You want your client to receive the settlement. But is there a part of you that says, I'd like to take this to court?
Yeah, this would be a great. I mean, can't hardly as a lawyer, you can't get a better. It was hard to walk a little bit. I think all the lawyers for the whistleblowers felt a little bit the same way. This was our case that we took down the field. The lawyers, I mean, you get Rusty Hard and Dick DeGuerin, you don't get any better than that. But still, we drove the ball to the 10-yard line, and they were going to march it across the goal line. I think a lot of us feel like we'd love our shot at it. But with that said, Mark's retirement age, David Maxwell, a few years older than that, this was a good deal. And, in that sense, what's best for Mark's is what I'm interested in. And
what kind of timing are we talking about for this? Any idea when the Supreme Court might decide whether to allow this to go back to Travis County and whether Ken Paxton is a state employee? And if that happened, I know you're at the mercy of the Travis County judge or a Travis County judge. is this something to be, you know, first quarter next year or after that?
Yeah, I don't know time-wise when we would get back to trial. I mean, the Supreme Court has to make some kind of a ruling, so they're notoriously on their own schedule.
Right.
I think if we got back to a Travis County judge, of course, the Paxton's going to argue we have a binding settlement, right? Therefore, we and probably try and appeal that if that ruling goes against him, which I think it would. So it's hard to say, but I do think that he's fearful of a – he basically insulted the Travis County judge. And like I said, I don't think it matters what county we're in. He'd have a hard row to hoe on that one.
Mark, this man who you used to consider a friend, this man you worked for so long, this man you testified against, is now back up there in the 8th floor office again, able to do his work and do it his way. Does that wake you up in the middle of the night? Does it eat at you?
No, it doesn't eat at me. I mean, look, we, as I said earlier, we made our report. We've cooperated with law enforcement. We've cooperated with the House. We cooperated with their attorneys. We gladly came and testified before the Senate. You know, people made a big deal about, well, these witnesses weren't under oath in the House investigation. I really don't understand that. Our transcripts from our interviews that we gave the House attorneys were typed up and turned over in discovery, and the defense attorneys had those transcripts and attempted to impeach us with those.
So you were on the record.
So yeah, and so we were on the record. So I don't really understand all the pushback from the Senate against the House about evidence not being taken under oath. If they had proven witnesses came in the Senate and were lying when they spoke to the House, that'd be a different story. Nobody proved that. And so, no, that doesn't eat at me. What frustrates me is that Ken Paxton's still not telling the truth about what happened. I heard him on the radio the other day, and he was asked softball questions with no pushback, no follow-up from people who know the evidence or want to ask about the evidence and pin him down on the facts. Put him on the witness stand with a lawyer like Don that knows this evidence backwards and forwards, and he'd be in real trouble.
When you heard that on the radio, did you yell at the radio? Well, Whiteley does that sometimes. He's like a real old man.
Only when Wheeler's on the radio is when I yell at him.
No, I just stopped listening to that radio station.
You changed the station. When's the last time you spoke to Ken Paxton?
Probably September the 26th.
Of
2020. That's the last time I've spoken to him. Yeah. So
if he would take your call today, what would you tell him?
Stop lying and be honest. And stop telling the people of Texas that you didn't do anything wrong. You did wrong. You abused the office. You know, Blake was asked the other day at our press conference what article in the articles of impeachment he thought was the most clearly proven. And number one, I certainly think the whistleblower article was clear, that extremely clear, especially Daniel Duco was the lawyer who cross-examined Henry De La Garza, the HR director for OAG, and he just destroyed him on cross. So that is very clear. But I think the abuse of office article, that's a very serious, and that's an umbrella over many right. of the other articles. If you are not fit to serve the people in that office, if you can't live up to your oath, if you can't use the power, the extreme power of an attorney general's office for the public benefit and the public good, and instead he was diverting it to benefit Nate Paul at taxpayer expense, that is so serious when you've worked in an AG's office and you're with all these career employees who devoted decades of their life and really care about the agency and the job that we were entrusted by the people to do. And people take that job seriously. You've got a lot of power in court, and Ken Paxton is pressuring his deputies. That's what he did. He pressured the 8 of us to do things that we knew were wrong because he wanted to help out his friend and donor, Nate Paul. And then we can talk about the house remodel and the Uber account and all these other things. And I think that clearly showed there was a quid pro quo. There was an exchange of value. Nate Paul had money. Ken Paxton had legal authority and power. And there was an exchange.
But what do you think? One question I can never figure out is, what did Ken Paxton see in Nate Paul? He has a lot of donors. What was this? I don't want to say man crush, but he diverted a lot of attention to Nate Paul.
You know, I'm going to answer it this way. That's a really good question. There's a lot more to be discovered about that. But I think more than enough evidence was shown at the trial by the House attorneys. As I said, think about the invoice of $120,000 that Ken Paxton paid out of his family trust
for the house repairs.
For the house repairs on October the 1st, 2020. What had happened the day before? We'd gone to the FBI. What happened on the morning of October 1st? We notified the agency that we'd gone to the FBI, and Jeff Mateer sent him a text message at 12:15 p.m. on October the 1st saying, we've made a whistleblower report. We want to meet with you this afternoon at 3, and he waits till 3 and sends a text and declines to meet with us. Also on October 30th, I had signed the cease and desist letter to Brandon Kamek.
October 1st, right?
On the 30th.
On September 30th.
Yeah, so I'm backing up one day.
Yeah.
On the 30th, we had told Kamek, all of us agreed to send that letter, and I signed it and said, stop, you're not authorized to work as a special prosecutor, and he wasn't. And so we know from evidence the House attorneys gathered that Brandon Kamek then emailed or called Ken Paxton up in Cleveland, and that got Ken Paxton scurrying to email his banker of the blind trust or the family trust up in Collin County and say, get a wire transfer ready for tomorrow of $120,000.
To cover his bases.
Well, to cover his bases.
And the thing that was left hanging out there in the trial, the proceeding in the Senate, was that the metadata showed that that invoice was created the day after Ken Paxton paid the invoice.
Well, I think, if I recall the evidence right, the metadata showed the invoice was created at 7 p.m. that night.
Right.
The wire transfer had gone earlier in the day.
So you paid for it before you got the invoice.
Before you got the invoice. After you'd been in the remodeled house for 2.5 months with no bills, no invoices, what contractor does that?
I want that contractor.
That's yeah.
That is a good deal.
Thank you for reminding me of this point, Jason. I want you to think about something. In Austin, Texas, how many home remodelers are there? You notice that Ken Paxton happened to use a home remodeler that's directly connected to Nate Paul? And here's the evidence for that. The head of Cupertino Builders, his remodeler, was a guy named Raj Kumar. And as Blake Brickman said Monday, Raj Kumar is a convicted felon for securities fraud in California. Raj Kumar is a business associate of Nate Paul's. Raj Kumar, it has been shown in a civil deposition, and the excerpt of that deposition is on file on the Senate website from all the evidence the House attorneys filed. There's a deposition excerpt, Nate Paul under oath admitting that he knows Raj Kumar, that he's a business associate, they occasionally do projects together, and the attorney also proved up that Raj Kumar had a world-class capital business email address. So Raj Kumar
is... Which was
is,
Nate Paul's business, right?
That's Nate
payroll,
Paul's business,
though.
Yeah. So Raj Kumar and Nate Paul are connected. They do business together. And Raj Kumar's got an email address at World Class Capital, Nate Paul's company. And yet he turns out to head the company that remodeled Ken Paxton's house. If that's not a smoking gun, I don't know what is.
I want to finish with this. If you could just kind of explain what you're doing now after all of this, and after everything that has transpired, after all that you've gone through professionally and personally, does it change how you approach your job now? Have you become a different type of employee? You know, are you looking over your shoulder more? Do you keep records of everything now? I mean, does it change how you do things?
No, it hasn't changed me. Look, I'm a Christian. I'm a believer in Jesus Christ. There's no perfect justice in this world. Perfect justice comes when we get before God. God talks about justice all through the Bible. And one of the things that has really comforted me and reassured me during these past 3 years with all the injustice I see in our legal situation with the Office of the Attorney General and Mr. Paxton is God talks about justice all the time. Open almost any psalm in the Book of Psalms and the word justice is there over and over and over. So God is sovereign over my life. He's sovereign over my circumstances. That's one thing I've really learned through this experience. So I'm not bitter. I'm not angry. I'm frustrated with the delays in the system. I'm frustrated that we didn't get the result I fully believe was proved well beyond a reasonable doubt in the Senate. But as Don said, it was a political proceeding, and basically we got a political vote, a party line vote. We live in a fallen world. People don't always step up and do the hard thing. People don't always step up and do their duty to the public. People think about their careers. They think about the pressure they're under. And I do appreciate the fact, not that the pressure was applied. I understand the senators were under tremendous pressure. I don't agree with their votes, but I realize that pressure was out there. But I work at the Dallas District Attorney's Office. I work in the economic crime section. I'm a prosecutor. I was a federal prosecutor for 16 years. Now I'm a state prosecutor. One of the things that has been hard about this is when you go through an experience like this, you do suffer damages. I mean, I was unemployed 4.5 months. Back pay is owed to me by the state for that. That's never been paid. I bought into the state retirement system because I had served 5 years in the Air Force on active duty. I paid for that time when I went to work at the AG's office. And if I had worked 5 years at the AG's office, I would have earned a state retirement, which would have been a very good retirement. And, you know, I'm at year four now. I worked 1 year. I've been waiting for 3 years to get my damages awarded. And so if I had been allowed to work one more year, I would have gotten 100% of my state retirement. As it is, as I sit here today, I'm entitled to 90% of that retirement. So, we'll see how all that works out. So that is hard. This has been really hard on my wife. It's been really hard on my daughters. It's hard to explain to people all that went on. You guys understand it. You've watched the trial. You understand politics and the law. This is a very nuanced legal fact situation, so it's hard to explain to people.
It has a lot of tentacles.
It has a lot of tentacles, but I'm not bitter. I'm not angry. I trust God. God has always taken care of me, and God's going to bring me through this. Someday, this will end. And I know where I'm going. When my time on this earth is over, I'm going to heaven because I put my faith in Jesus Christ. That's what matters to me. I want to live my life the right way. I want to honor Him. I want to glorify Him. And that's why I said those things at trial, and that's why I'm saying it now. My hope is not in politics. Politics is important. Government's important. Politics won't save anybody's soul. The only qualified Savior in this universe is Jesus Christ. So if anybody doesn't know Christ, open the book of John and start reading, and you need a Savior to represent you before a holy and perfect God, and none of us are holy and perfect. So that's why Christ went to the cross and laid His life down to save us. So that's what gives me hope, and that's who I'm living for. I'm here to serve Him, and God tells me to do my job to the best of my ability. He's my ultimate boss, and what I do in the workplace matters to Him. So I'm trying to do the best I can as a state prosecutor, just like I did at the AG's office, just like I did as a federal prosecutor.
This is the first episode I've ever had the last question in, so I don't know. I'm kind of thrown off here for a moment.
But look out, Whiteley's last questions are usually four questions.
He's telling me don't talk any longer.
Well, no, Wheeler will come back with something else, I promise you. But it's a question for both of you guys, and I'm curious whether you think that for the reasons you just laid out, whether you think that Paxton's acquittal in the state Senate is going to have a chilling effect on any other whistleblower that comes out. Don, I'll start with you and let you have the final word, Mark.
That's a good question. I mean, it certainly, you would think it would, right? I mean, these are probably the most, this is a case study in the whistleblower statute, right? They report something and they're fired essentially a day or two later. I mean, it doesn't get any plainer than that. And here's, look what happened to them. I think any whistleblower faces that kind of battle. But I think it's damaging. It's a terrible precedent. But we're not done. The story's not done.
The story is not done.
And,
still pending.
It is nuanced, like Mark said. If we ever get to a civil courtroom, it's not as nuanced. Did they report a violation of the law, and was there retaliation? That's not all that nuanced.
Mark, final word on this. Do you think this prevents people like you from reporting wrongdoing that they see in the future at state agencies?
I think it'll make them think not twice but three times, because they're going to see what we've gone through, the delay that the OAG has caused. I mean, here we are 3 years in, and things are still tied up in a bit of a knot. And then you get smeared. Your boss accuses you of committing crimes, of being rogue employees, and he's basically putting things out in that internal report, which was full of misstatements and false statements, accusing us of wrongdoing. So I think people are going to see its heart. Here's one thing I've always taken comfort in, though. If you were a single whistleblower, it would really be hard. But there were eight of us. So, you know, the four of us that are plaintiffs, and then one other person was fired, and then three resigned. But in total, there were eight whistleblowers, and four of us have filed a civil lawsuit. So it's not just one person saying it. It's not just somebody making an excuse for poor performance. None of us were ever counseled for being bad employees before this happened. And even though the agency has made up paper tissue thin excuses for why they retaliated against us and fired us, and we will easily disprove those at a trial, we were retaliated against immediately. I was put on investigative leave on October the 2nd. The day after we notified the agency that we were whistleblowers, and so was David Maxwell. And then they started, as soon as the new first assistant came in, Brent Webster, he came in, obviously, with the agenda of getting rid of all of us, because within 45 days, everybody was gone. So how does that happen? You've got a whistleblower statute that says you can't retaliate, and yet all eight executive deputies who made that report were gone within 45 days. The law says, If you take retaliatory action within 90 days, it's presumed to be a motive of retaliation, which is illegal under that statute. They got rid of us within 45 days, yeah. Half that time. So anyway, wow. I think it'll make people think twice. I think a whistleblower statute is good public policy. And I'll finish with this thought. We were the people on the inside who could see the wrongdoing. People lower down the ranks, they didn't see this. They didn't meet with Ken Paxton. He didn't call them. He didn't pressure them to do illegal things like he did me and David Maxwell and all the others. And so we had the personal knowledge of what was going on. So if you have a statute that protects the people who know about the wrongdoing, that encourages them to come forward. But if the government and the court system don't enforce that statute, it doesn't help. No law is any good. It's just worth the piece of paper it's written on if you don't enforce it. You've got to have enforcement.
All right, Mark Penley, one of the Paxton whistleblowers, thanks so much for being here. Don Tittle, we appreciate you as well. It must be tough to represent this guy. He's good.
He's a great guy. Yeah. Been a friend for 30-plus years.
Ah, so. Okay.
I got a good lawyer.
Thanks to both of you for coming to Yolitics and helping to continue to tell the story. And of course, there's an open invitation to Attorney General Ken Paxton. If he ever wants to come on, we know you listen, AG Paxton. Come on, talk to us about all of this.
We'll meet you in Austin.
But, you know, to be continued, perhaps. I mean, this isn't over yet. We may have to do this again. But thanks for coming in. And, Mark, I know you had a tee there. I thought it would be perfect, though, if you would have had a fallout. I mean, just the fallout.
That's the name of one of the beers.
It's
one of the beers.
It's an ongoing fallout. It would have been perfect.
Gentlemen, thanks so much. We appreciate it.
Click subscribe and get Yolitics every week. Yolitics, the unofficial political podcast of Texas.